termo de adotar o canto de carne que vai ser governo, os grandes filósofos do local, o posto da Padaia de South Africa, e People Centered and Justice, Justice Focused, o meu bonito.
If you are to understand law globally, then we need to go further than viewing law as solely a state mechanism, but to bring order to a procedure that will keep on knitting the country together. This can only be realized when the point of departure is based on accepting the right that South Africa is a plurality of pluralities. The harmonization of various laws will require a testing of the constitutionality of the rules of other personal and legal systems, for example, within the religious field laws such as canon law. The participation of relevant religious and cultural communities must be evident in the process of determining the constitutionality and content of germane rules. Whatever the rationale for the universal or the survival of deep legal pluralism in South Africa, legal pluralism is more than a simple juristic peculiarity. It is a reality that is closely interwoven with the daily lives of all South Africans. State law, customary law, human rights law, and religious laws touch the life of a South African in one way or other. Individuals often find themselves in overlapping and even contradictory situations originating from different legal systems, and the courts have to determine which law is applicable to a certain set of facts through the application of the choices of law, of rules. That is why it does not come up as a surprise that people find themselves at times aware or unaware that they are to comply with one or more legal tradition. Post-apartheid South Africa, whilst engaged in post-modern legal reconstruction, as various law commission reports document, find that local legal norms remain extremely relevant. Therefore, one cannot just speak of South African law, rather South African laws, because international laws, religious laws, and customary laws are esteemed in the Constitution. Pluralities are like an ingredient characterizing living laws which one cannot afford to turn a blind eye to and deny their existence. The new constitutional order wants a fundamental change in the grand norm of the South African legal order, a departure from parliamentary supremacy towards the supremacy of the Constitution. One may ask, why did South Africa opt for constitutional supremacy? Under apartheid, Parliament enjoyed supremacy and no constitution or bill of rights provided any effect on its legislative powers. Oppressive laws passed by Parliament could, for the most part, not be challenged in the courts. The apartheid system was sustained by lack of accountability and the construct of parliamentary sovereignty. South Africa opted for constitutional supremacy, bearing in mind its history and a support mechanism for the diverse society that the country manifests. Today's rule of law is given birth by the experience of the people, a clear sign that actual rule of law comes from legal pluralism, given the makeup of the society. Put another way, law does owe its being from the context, that is, from the society. With experience, it matures through debates and reaches its prime through the acts of parliament. This can be verified in the preamble of South Africa's constitution. The provisions of the constitution have priority over any other laws in the country, or it may mean that any law or conduct that is, for whatever reason, inconsistent with the constitution will be null and void. This should not be an end state, rather, but a mitigation against the bad behavior. In other words, unlike apartheid legislation whereby the parliament was governing, the constitution is introduced to the basis that in the new South Africa, law should govern. However, the Constitution goes further and makes provision for a number of other independent state institutions, the purpose of which is to strengthen constitutional democracy in the Republic. Determining how the Constitution could be approached, Montana and Ramaphosa adopted the stand that the Constitution can be interpreted as living structure on the basis of its purpose and objectives. Apart from its protective character, the Constitution should be a participation enhancing instrument in this way, achieving the respect of rights to all legal actors in the country. The Bill of Rights seeks not to invade rights but to expand rights. Yet with newer challenges, there must be even more enriching engagements. The greatest achievement of the IDNDC's Constitution was to make the Constitution coexist with other laws in the country. This becomes an assurance for minorities fearful of being swamped and denied existence. Living together challenges healthy interaction because participation is a liberation-enhancing factor. To understand the Constitution of South Africa again, one has to be culture-specific. To achieve the highest level of togetherness, there is no better way to put this than a lot is done in referring to settlement of disputes. At the heart of African adjudication lies the notion of reconciliation or restoration of harmony. Understanding questions needing more attention, though, is the attitude of the Constitution in enhancing the rule of law, an effort to transform other legal systems so they are congruent or compatible either with its operations only, or is the Constitution an opportunity to enhance rule of law so that the nation is people-centered and justice-focused? At the moment, one, when reading through the Constitution at times, sees that certainly the Constitution does push towards compatibility. However, values underlying open democratic society should be understood as closely related to human dignity more than ensuring compatibility of other laws to the Constitution. Human dignity should be at the heart of the rule of law. The focus must be with the people and justice. South Africa has many religions. Traditional African religions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, and perhaps more others. All these religions and their diversities within them have norms and laws governing communal life. For example, within Christianity, we've got Catholic Church, which is governed by Corpus Juris Canonica as a normative system that includes canons, decreta, decretalia, constitutions, precepta, responsiones, recepta, and apostole, and other legal customs. Given the universal and particular character of the Catholic Church, churches can alone, one realizes that it does have the universal laws as well as the particular laws. This means that then that the state cannot be totally divorced from religion. It has to engage the discussions and negotiations. In this, it is like the Indian Constitution of 1950. The crafters of South African Constitution were well aware of the problem that could be caused by insisting on the separation between church and state. Apart from endless dissatisfaction, street separation would have forced a number of citizens to a schizophrenic identity. Assisting on street separation would have meant insensitivity of crafters to the context wherein the Constitution was going to be lived. As it stands, it does give a flavor that whilst the state is in control, there is at the same time a desire to discharge itself from religious affairs and practices as others, and it will be directly, if it were to do that, then it would be directly interfering with the religious rights. Coexistence of several legal systems can be strenuous, surely. For different legal orders like maps have different scales, different forms of projection and centering, different systems of mobilization. There's always a movement shifting the balance, which at times is beyond the state's power and control. Aware of the fact that an application of the theory of power does not produce rights results in all situations when you have to battle with the question how to keep the legal balance. Mensi gave us an indication of how to approach this when he proposed a kind model. A kind model that he proposes has got four corners, as all of us, I suppose, are aware of what kind of kinds. At the top of this kind, he put the natural laws in the form of ethics and values. Whereas on the right of the card, the socio-cultural and socio-economic norms, and on the left of the card, the state law, and at the bottom of the card, of the kite, the international laws. Clearly, no one legal framework can claim monopoly for such an option, mean a reversal of legal centralism, that is, a return to apartheid. The concept of legal pluralism has proved enormously fruitful in challenging ideas about the centrality of state law and increasing awareness of the diversity of ways that individuals interact with the law. According to Sachs, the best constitution and the best bill of rights is constructed through an actual consultation process involving widespread strata of the population. The plurality then is ever present, and each part of the plurality has a right to be part of the whole and to speak up for itself and for its vision of the whole. While South African constitution accepts the diversity and recognizes them to promote diversity, it may be necessary to create expressions of provisions for differences, at the same time to hint for the comprehensiveness of how to live together in one nation. A lot of arguments have been previously raised when religious and customary laws were accused of legal abuse. In a way, this has led to other legal frameworks getting excluded as a mechanism of eroding others from creatively contributing to the well-being of the country as a whole. This kind of argumentation is often bad politics, disguised as serious scholarship. Critical studies cannot mean fussy selective criticism based on highly subjective predilections. Much suffering and injustice is created by modern structures and institutions, often manifestly state-centered and state-controlled, thus definitively legal, getting in blatant violation of most basic principles of justice. The courts are aware of the dangers of the lawfare and have to develop a jurisprudence that is balanced enough to give the government and the legislature the space to do their job. The purpose of the rule of law is to protect, therefore, the human basic human rights, requiring the government to act in accordance with the pre-announced clear and general rules in accordance with fair procedures, making the way forward. The state will need to carefully engage with legal actors. Of course, this can only be realized when the point of departure is based on accepting the right to South Africa is plurality of pluralities. Based then on the above, a responsible state when taking decisions would be aware that it's not only the authority that is in the country that takes decisions. There are also others that are part of the state. Legal pluralism throws a perennial challenge to how lawyers are trained with a view to actively contribute and directly address community needs in post-apartheid South Africa. As Chief Justice Dhawan well pointed out, that these days no longer sufficient for judges to rely on the say-so of parliament or technical ratings of legislation as providing justification for the decisions, but that judges bear the ultimate responsibility to justify their decisions not only by reference to authority, but by reference to ideas and values. Then one say, then what does this lead us? Can lawyers and socio-legal practitioners need to enroll for formal legal studies in order to gain an appreciation of how each how each legal structure will permeate each other. And secondly, this gives also now a challenge also to the state legal practitioners that they have to go an extra mile whereby they engage and try to understand how can a law works, because we understand very well that at times the courts would have to embrace or to adjudicate religious matters. But how one then can adjudicate the religious matters without a certain background of canon law? Ultimately, there is a place for all legal systems in post-apartheid South Africa. Indeed, a place for religious laws, customs, and culture that will enable coexistence in a modern world. Thank you.
Thank you.